From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall, and I'm joined today by two people from an organization in our community called Hope Restores, which has been active for several years. We're going to get an update on some developments in that organization, some wonderful news that they've had in the last couple of months, and then see what they're all about going forward here in the La Crosse area. Let me welcome my two guests. They are co-founders of Hope Restores, and we have Shai Jackson here, who's the Executive Director of Operations for Hope Restores. Shai, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Happy to be here.
And Maya Curtis is, as I mentioned, the co-founder. She's the Executive Director of Development for Hope Restores. Maya, welcome back to Newsmakers.
Thanks for having me.
So a lot has happened since the last time we talked. I think it's been probably more than a year since we've talked specifically about Hope Restores. I know, Shai, you joined us for a program on affordable housing a little while back, more recently. But one of the big things that has happened in the story of Hope Restores is that you've been honored with the National Education Association's Reg Weaver Human and Civil Rights Award. That is amazing. First of all, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Tell me about when you found out that you were going to receive that award. Shai, let's start with you.
We found out in May. I'm trying to think of the exact time. Shamai will have to correct me here if I'm wrong. But as usual, there's, you know, tons of things going on. So when we got it, we were extremely excited. We didn't fully grasp how the gravity of the award itself. And so as we kind of spoke to people, we learned more and more about this, and we quickly realized, whoa, this is huge, you know? So we were very, very appreciative and humbled before, but it was just so much more humbling to find out just how large this organization is, and that they have their eyes looking for people that are doing the work outside of, you know, outside of their neighborhoods, out in the world, across the state. So it was pretty big that Hope Restores in La Crosse, Wisconsin, was recognized for this. So I think there still are a lot of emotions and excitement when it comes to this award, but we are just so grateful.
Maya, what was that process like? Is this something that you had to apply for, or did someone locally here have to nominate you, or something like that, or does the NEA just have like spies all over, like looking for awesome people doing things?
So we found out a lot. So we were nominated by a teacher from Logan Middle School, Mr. Rodriguez, and there was another teacher involved as well, and I don't remember her name. It was really surprising to us, and we were so thankful. We learned a lot about the Reg Weaver Award, learned a lot about him, did a lot of work trying to figure out exactly what the NEA is and what they do. And so it was just a lot of just homework and talking to other people and getting really excited the more and more we learned. We did a video, a documentary on Hope Restores, and information about like what we do, took a lot of pictures. It was pretty awesome. It kind of kept coming at us. And then we were flown down to Florida at the award ceremony. It was just amazing. I mean, when I tell you, so many loving, kind people, we felt famous like for the day. And I, no joke, people just clapping and saying so many awesome things about Hope Restores, and asking about, you know, what's it like living in La Crosse. There was another person who won from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So it was two of us from Wisconsin. Just felt awesome to be in a smaller town and just to be pretty new doing this work to be recognized. And so, I know, it felt really good.
So you're down there in Florida for the celebration. How many winners do they have every year?
This year there was 10 different awardees that are all recognized in different categories. And so The Human and Civil Rights Award was the only category. And then there are other categories based off of the work that those individuals are doing from their areas of the map, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And they named this award after Reg Weaver, and Maya mentioned having an opportunity to just learn a little bit about who he was. I know neither one of you may be prepared to give his entire biography, but who was Reg Weaver?
Reg Weaver was an educator. He has done a lot of work around reducing poverty entry points with education and kids. And so he's very passionate about removing those barriers. So a lot of the work that we do with working with kids, with taking on, you know, those barriers head first, it really aligned with all the things that he's very much so passionate about. We were hoping that we were going to get to meet him, and it sounds like it might still be an opportunity for down the line. He was dealing with some personal things, and so he wasn't able to be there. But we did get to learn a little bit about him through some of the guests and folks at the table that we were sitting at. And they just spoke about him with just so much compassion and just so much respect. And we're looking forward till we can meet him face to face.
You talked about how much of your work just really it's kind of sounds like he and you have been almost on parallel paths because a lot of your work is with younger people and creating opportunities for the next generation and so on. I want to, for people who haven't heard your story yet, get a little bit into how Hope Restores started and maybe even how you landed here. Shai, I know, I remember that that you're not from La Crosse, but you arrived here 20 or so years ago. Maya, what brought you here? Are you like born and raised, or are you a transplant as well?
Yes, no, I am not from La Crosse. And what brought me here is my friend Shai. We have been friends since we were in middle school, and she actually brought me to the area. And so I decided to pack my family up and come and check out La Crosse, Wisconsin. We had a couple business ideas we were working on.
Okay.
So that's what brought me here to La Crosse.
And how long have you lived here?
Now for 7 years.
Okay. So Shai came and checked it out first, and then sent the bat signal up in the sky or something like that. Nice.
Yep. That's exactly how it was.
Yeah, kind of like that. And I was like, okay, here I come.
there we go. Shai, what brought you to La Crosse, once you got here, what made you want to stay?
I came here with my family, right? So I came and did my last year of high school here, actually.
Okay.
And so once I got here, we had already started kind of laying down roots. You know, when you're with your family, you're just kind of a part of that puzzle, right? So I wasn't making any grand escapes. I was just kind of here existing with my family. And then I stayed because I started to make friends. I got busy with school. I became a lifetime student. I just, there was nothing else that I was really reaching for at that time. And so staying put in the meantime is what just kind of worked out.
And so you've started Hope Restores a few years ago. Has it been 4 years now or at least 3 years, huh?
This is the third year.
This is the third year. Okay. How did that process start? Like when did you look around and realize, okay, we need these resources created in our community, and I'm the one to do it?
It wasn't like
overnight thing. I think it was as different issues continued to pile up, all of the social unrest. I mean, the world in whole seemed like it was on fire at the time. You know, our kids were at school, they were protesting, they felt like nobody was supporting them. And much to their words, you know, the adults, they really weren't. They weren't behind them and supporting them the way that they could be. And something needed to be done, you know, having conversations with our families, with our brothers, you know, and the crying and the feeling so vulnerable and so angry and, you know, all that hurt. What do you do with it? And so that's when Shmaya and I decided that we needed to do something. We needed to help our kids, but then we also needed to help people heal, because the same way that our kids were hurting and feeling like they weren't being seen, adults are feeling the same way. And so we wanted to create a safe space that people could come and they can heal, that they can be around like people, that they know that we were safe for anything that they might need. They needed to talk. And so it just really became a place where people can heal and come together as a community. And that was the biggest goal of Hope Restores, was healing, and still is healing.
Maya, those early conversations where you're deciding exactly what direction to go with your efforts, what was that like for you?
Well, like Shai said, it was a lot of listening, a lot of like listening to our youth and hearing their voices and hearing that they felt like the adults around them were totally failing them, from their school teachers to their parents in their community. We were also hearing the voices of African-American people saying that they felt isolated and they didn't feel like a part of this community, and they were just keeping to themselves to survive. And then we had our allies with the white community that were just like, look, I don't know what you guys are going through exactly, but I'm hearing your voices and I want to help, but I truly don't know where to start and how to help. And so me and Shai took that and we were like, hey, we need to do something about this, you know? That was just after the George Floyd murder and our community was just shooken up, COVID, everything. And we realized that we needed a safe place for people to start the process of healing. Most of us need that process of healing. We recognize trauma in our community and the whole lacrosse area, you know, and we recognize our youth were going to school and getting re-traumatized. And just as a community, George Floyd, that was trauma for us. I mean, it hit us in such a way that we didn't even know what our worth was. We doubted, like, did we have any rights or what was our safety? Like, could I protect my boys, you know, and what risks were my brothers at and my cousins at being Black males, you know? And so we were just really emotional. And so Hope Restores came into play because we wanted to put hope back into the lacrosse community, hope back into the Western Wisconsin community. We have a group of isolated people. We have youth and we have people who want to step up. And so Hope Restores became a healing center. And that's what we do. We focus a lot on past traumas and healing and building community conversations, knocking down that barrier that's keeping us from realizing that we're all just human beings and that we need each other in order to live a good life on this earth, you know? And so that's pretty much what our early conversations were, is like, where do we jump in? How do we help? What can we do? And that's pretty much it.
What was the first program that you remembered? Like, if you're putting your toe in the water, kind of, what can we offer the community? What was the first sort of thing that you offered to people?
It was our support groups. One thing is just to have a safe center to go to, right? And we put African American Resource Center so that African American people knew that this is a safe spot for you. You don't have to wonder. And then our support groups. So our Brothers Battling Barriers was our first support group that we started. And then after that, we started our Women of Melanin group. And then after we started the support groups, we realized that, hey, there's some more barriers. Like, how do people even get to support groups, you know? And from our groups, we heard that people had transportation issues. So then we started our transportation program. And then as childcare, like, I want to better myself, but I have nobody to watch my kids while I go to an interview, you know, or I don't have anybody in this community. So childcare was a huge barrier. And so we started our childcare center and our drop-in childcare. And then we started our toiletry cabinet. Everything just came along from the needs of the community, listening and hearing what people needed, what barriers they were facing. And then us putting our heads together like, okay, well, we got to try to help, you know? And from there, we just kept on creating programs, maybe too many. Maybe too many sometimes, right, Shai?
Right.
Well, I want to find out about some of these because it really is a daunting list of programs that you run at Hope Restores, and I want to hear more details about what some of those are. But what you've already said is so interesting because you have a lot of there are organizations all over who kind of. They're very external. They're their own corporate entity, and they parachute into a community to take care of a specific problem or a specific need. And you know, it in disaster relief or things like that is mostly what one thinks about. But when you're talking about people who are part of a community and they have local issues that need to be addressed, the solutions to those issues are not going to come from somebody parachuting in. It's going to come from somebody who lives and breathes what that community is going through. So it's interesting to hear that that's how your organization got started. Shai, as you started that organization along with Maya, did you find that there are resources available for grassroots starting organizations, or is there more to be done there?
There are some resources that were available. It all depends on how those resources are going to be used, right? So if we are talking about resources to help operationally to get the organization started, well, that's very limited. And those resources would be writing for grants, and then donations really are the biggest ways. Outside of that, resources to help get to the people or get to the clients, well, there are quite a few resources there. The issue with the resources is how they're being distributed, access to those resources, and is that access equitable? And so that's where a lot of the opportunity areas came in at, with trying to get some of these resources out to the clients that we were helping. A lot of times when they were showing up to receive these resources, they weren't being received the same way as someone that does not necessarily look like them. And so they were having a more difficult time having those barriers removed to begin with. And so they would leave some of these places feeling very discouraged, feeling like, I just wasted a whole day. You know, I could have gone to work instead of coming down here and, you know, trying to get this taken care of. And then it leads to them possibly not coming back for that resource again. And when they don't come back for that resource again, it hurts everybody that's connected to them. Especially everyone that's in the home, but even like looking outside the home, if you don't have the resources that you need to get your kid to school, now your kid's affected, that teacher's affected, their friend's affected, right? Because they're all these pieces come together. And so it just makes sense that we can try to cast a wider net when we're helping, but then when we're doing that, to be transparent about it and then show how everyone is connected and how creating this safe space really does benefit everyone.
We're talking to Shai Jackson and Maya Curtis today from Hope Restores here on Newsmakers, and our conversation will continue in just a moment. We're going to find out what some of these programs are that they offer to people in the community, and we've got some upcoming events that you can participate in as well, and you'll find out all about that coming up here on Newsmakers. If you'd like to drop us a line anytime through the week, I'd really love to hear from you. Our email address is newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Our conversation with Shai and Maya continues in just a moment here on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Wisconsin Public Radio, and you're listening to Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse, in our studio on the campus of UW-La Crosse, as a matter of fact. Maya Curtis and Shai Jackson are with me today. They are the co-founders and each executive director of a separate area of responsibility at Hope Restores, which is a wonderful organization providing various kinds of services to African-American residents in the La Crosse area, and as well as a lot of outreach and education to all of us. And I appreciate them joining us on the program today. I alluded to some of the things we want to talk about. Maya mentioned the Women of Melanin group and the Cycle Breakers group, I think it was, maybe the that were some of the first things that you started. There are a lot of programs that you offer through Hope Restores. Some of them training programs that are just for a few weeks. Some of them more ongoing. What would you say is the most visible program that's run through Hope Restores at the moment?
Well, I mean, most of our support groups, I'd have to say all of them. So like I said, when we first started, we were focusing on like the whole family. And so we figured that we'd just focus on the parents. You know, there's lots of programs out here for kids and trying to help build kids up. But then when they're going back into a household where there's addiction or mental health or a non-functioning parent, you know, it doesn't help them. It actually harms them even more. And we say like only the strong survive, but living in a home where all those things are going on, you have to be pretty strong to survive that. And that's not fair in our youth. So we knew that we needed to focus a lot on the parents. So we started off with our men's group, focusing on men, having conversations, talking about their past trauma, making them aware of even the word trauma. Like, why do I do the things that I do? Why am I behaving this way? And when they started figuring out there was a reason and things happened in their past for why they are doing the things they're doing, they just started being like, oh my gosh, wow, I didn't even understand that. And my mom and my dad, they've been doing the same thing. And my grandma, everybody's been doing the same thing. And nobody has sat down and be like, hey, why are we continuously doing this, you know? And so by our men learning about their past traumas, it allowed them to kind of start over and make decisions about how they wanted to change their lives for them and their families. We do a lot of talking about healing. And then with us being a resource center, as the men are getting ready to change, we have tools for them to use. And so it's been really beautiful. And the women's group mimics the same exact thing. We're big on affirmations and self-love. One thing that I teach the women in our women's group is that we have to take care of ourselves in order to take care of other people. Just like when you get on a flight, they make you put your mask on before you put your kid's mask on. And as a mom, that's kind of like, wait, what do you mean? Put my mask on first. But they're telling us to put our mask on first is because we have to breathe in order to be able to help somebody else to breathe. And so a lot of women have been taking care of everybody else, but forgetting how to take care of themselves. And then they pass those same behaviors on to their kids, especially their daughters, is like, hey, I take care of everybody else, but I don't take care of myself. And so we talk about how do we take care of ourselves? And then we can take care of other people. And that's a big change for us as women, is like learning to take care of ourselves first. But we do a lot of conversations focusing on self-care, self-love, in order for us to be good moms out in this world. I really get all caught up when I talk about those groups.
Well, so, you can tell that you're passionate about it, and it's important. It's important for what you're saying about people realizing for the first time this language surrounding trauma and this idea that things completely outside of your own influence might affect the way that you treat people for the rest of your life. It's so important for people to grasp.
Exactly. When I tell you that the work that we do is what I was meant to do on this earth, like we were asked a question. Well, I was asked a question in an interview for NEA about what do I think about people who don't care about other people? And I was like, wait, I can't see how those people exist in this world. I was like, maybe it's just something naturally in me, but I was born caring about other people, and it's been who I am, and I've embraced it. And you get hurt when you're like me because you're sensitive and you care, and then other people sometimes can be a little mean, but that's just how I am. And so I'm sometimes like, wait, everybody doesn't feel this way. And then to me, I'm always feeling like, well, it's just because they don't know yet. They don't know the power of loving somebody else. They don't know the power of kindness and giving. They don't know that power yet. They don't know how much that it will help them when they are out there helping other people. And a lot of times I always say that when people are just mean, and it's because they don't feel good about themselves. And so in my head, they're a victim as well. And so I'm there trying to convince them, like, hey, how are you feeling? Because when you feel good about yourself, you really can get out there and treat other people well, even if it's a simple hi because you had a good day, you know, or a simple turn around and be like, hey, can I hold the door for you? Or, hey, did you need anything? You know, or, hey, I want to get involved in my local organization. That those people do those things when they feel good about themselves. And so I think the power of self-love is just amazing. And I think we need to do more practicing skills of self-love. Sorry, I kind of went out off, but.
No, that's,
got a little bit in there.
that's perfect. It's perfect. But I'm curious about how for somebody who's, you talked about people just not even being familiar with what trauma is. Now you're talking about people like self-love who might have been through circumstances in their life where that's not even a thing that they even thought about for themselves. And then you add on to it, social pressures, and all the other kinds of pressures of living in a community. I think it was Shai who talked about people looking for resources, not knowing if they would be welcome because they might be the only Black person to go into that office that day, or, you know, the person, you know, looked different from them and made assumptions about them and so on. So people overcoming all of this, how do you get them to set that aside, or maybe work through it enough to realize that they are a person of real value?
Oh, wow. I would have to say it's a process, right? Like, if you've been living in this earth and didn't even realize that you had traumas and you just thought that that was what it is, you know, so it's a process, but it first starts by opening that conversation and having that, somebody say something to you to let you know that, hey, like, have you heard of the word trauma? Oh, no, what's trauma? Well, trauma is something that most of us have been through in this world. And then we do the, sorry, I just kind of blinked out on what I was going to say next. But we watched the resilience film. And I don't know if you're familiar with resilience film.
I'm not.
But it talks about trauma and the ACEs test, and talks about like how trauma affects people. And so everybody who comes into Hope Restores, we show this film once a month. And each one of our groups, we show that film to our groups a few times. When they watch that film, their eyes open up to figuring out some things about themselves, you know, like why they behave the way they do. And then once they start learning about trauma, they're a little bit open to say, like, oh my gosh, like, it's a full conversation. It takes, I would say, like, sometimes 2 to 3 groups to stop talking about everything they've learned because they're just like fascinated, you know? And then we just start talking about affirmations and self-love. It's because you can start over. Like, as human beings, we get to start all over. And yes, we have all those wounds from the past traumas, and I call them cuts in our arms, but love can heal those. And that's what kindness can heal those. And so it's like putting something else into your body, you know? So our men's group are the ones who started our youth groups, because we actually weren't going to do any youth groups at all. We were going to focus more on the men and women. But our men's group learned about their past traumas, and then they were able to see some of the mistakes that they made. And then as they were feeling good and start loving on themselves and each other, they were like, hey, I want to give something back to the community. Like, I want to get out there and go mow some lawns. I want to get out there and help some people. I want to get out there and start talking to these young boys who have no idea, and just be there for them and give them some ideas of like the things that I went through, you know, and maybe some of them will do something different. I want to just be out there and help, is what our men's group said. And so we sat down and came up with a name for a youth group called the Cycle Breakers. They came up with a program built around love and affirmations and positivity and a mentor. And that's when we created our Cycle Breakers group. And that group just gives boys in the community a chance to have somebody that loves you, somebody that can shake your hand, give you a hug, somebody who's going to say positive words to you, uplift you, somebody that is there for you. Most of us in this world sometimes feel lonely. And so imagine our young boys out here just by themselves. And a lot of our parents are that we have are dealing with addictions or absent parents or parents who are dealing with mental health. Our parents don't even recognize that there's anything wrong when there is. And so having a strong male mentor for our boys is just something that's really important, and it's been really helpful. So I see that the trauma can also lead to action after you're aware of it, and it can lead to love.
Those youth groups are very important to your organization, considering that they weren't originally even part of the plan. Shai, it looks like you've got the Cycle Breakers for the young men, the boys, so to speak, and you've got the Little Women of Melanin, which is obviously a spin-off group of the Women of Melanin, which is for the adult women. What age groups are you working with in those youth discussion groups?
Sure. So for our youth groups, we have the Little Women of Melanin, which goes from ages 8 until 12, and then the girls group goes from ages 12 to 18, and then the Cycle Breakers goes from ages 8 until 17. And the reason that there's only one Cycle Breaker group, one boys group that captures everything, is because the guys are doing a lot of the same thing, but then there's a lot of lessons that can that are more easily passed on to the boys. And a lot of the boys are kind of, the guys are kind of into all the same things. They're having a lot of the same similar questions. And so we didn't see a need to break up the 8 to the 12 for the boys, because the program is designed so that the older kids can naturally become a mentor while they're in that group. And they're doing a lot of leading through example, just being there and having the younger boys seeing them and seeing how cool this high school kid looks. And, you know, he's doing great and has these opportunities. Those are things to aspire to. That's putting excellence back in the room with them that looks like them. And so they know that that is possible. The reason that it stops at age 17 is because when you're 18, you're able to come into the men's group, which a lot of the younger boys can't wait to get into the men's group, right? Because then they'll be in there with that older cool uncle, you know? And so all the groups that we do there, we really make sure that it wraps its arms around everyone, that everyone recognizes that we're all connected and that we're all family. And so that's how we broke down the age of the different youth groups.
We've talked about the discussion groups as I just casually referenced them. This is not like, this is not just, they don't just show up and chat. Like there is a lot of thought that goes into how these groups are structured. How do you know when it's firing on all cylinders? How do you know when you've got a plan together that works?
Well, there's an agenda for each group. So each group it's more than a group. It's a program that they're working, and they're eight-week programs. And so for each week, there is certain topics that they're going to touch on. Each topic is going to be building in all of these things that we want them to be working on, right? So there's going to be an affirmation in there that they're going to open up with. There's going to be some type of mantra that they're going to do. We're going to be checking people's temperatures. And when I say that, I mean, how's it going? How was your week? You know, what's new? What was your high for this week? You know, what are you looking forward to? And so it's creating community, and it's creating natural conversation. And it's also showing what positive conversation looks like as well, so that they can take that back out outside of Hope Restores doors when they go out and they go to communicate and continue these, you know, fruitful conversations. And so we have those elements of it built in there, but then we also have the topic that's going to be spoken about. So if I take a look at the cycle breakers, they're always learning about, there's a new leader that they're going to be learning about. They're going to be learning about hygiene 1 week and how that all comes to play. They learn about what self-confidence looks like. And so they're hitting on all these different elements. And I know that it's connecting when engagement is really high. And if you ever come into Hope Restores, when there's a group going on, you would definitely say that engagement is high. Like, we are hitting all the things and checking all the boxes. And that's absolutely beautiful to see the kids participating and just being fully in that moment and in their group. So that's how we really know that it's clicking. And then we do also do evaluations throughout the group. You know, is there anything that you guys want to talk more about? Is there anything that you didn't really care for? And they let us know. We refuse to lock into a plan or agenda that doesn't work. We want to make sure that if we're asking other people to interrupt and dismantle systems that are broken, that we are also willing to interrupt any systems that we have that are broken and are not working for the people that it's meant to serve. And so we encourage, you know, them to help us to continue to grow each one of these programs to be a better program or to capture a topic that we may have missed before. And the kids just really are, they're just really coming alive, and just to see them really feeling like they're a part of what they're building. They believe in the groups that they're in, and they look forward to coming back. That says a lot when young kids want to come back and be around adults. It's a win. It says a lot.
Yeah, right. I mean, usually the kids are trying to get rid of the adults. So you've got something going on there, which is good. The practical limitations is another thing that your organization works to get past. People finding transportation to meetings, people needing childcare to participate in certain things, and you offer help to some of those families. Talk about how your drop-in childcare program works, or maybe how your transportation program for people who need to find a way to get back and forth to these opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we hear the need and we just try to jump in and try to help. And I mean, unfortunately, here in La Crosse, we have a few food desert areas, right? So areas that people don't have local groceries, I mean, don't have access to groceries, affordable groceries, right? And so we were seeing that people are having to go to Quick Trip and grab things that they need. And unfortunately, that doesn't help you stretch the dollar for the month, you know? With transportation being a need, our public transportation runs funny. So like people who work at a Walmart on a Saturday were having hard times getting to work. And it just was, people just were having hard times getting to appointments and stuff like that. And so that's why we decided to do the transportation program, is just to kind of meet the need. And it helps. It really does help when you have programs set into play that are going to help you with those barriers that you're facing. We do a diaper program so people can come pick up diapers. We work along with the parenting place. They're located on Green Bay Street. We're over on the north side. And so it helps people that are closer to the north side be able to come and pick up diapers and wipes, you know? And it's an awesome program. It's probably one of the programs that we see people every day, about 10 people show up to pick up diapers. I mean, it's a huge need. And they're expensive, you know? And so we are seeing that people are getting the supports they need from the programs that we have at Hope Restores, from testimonies, from just like, hey, that really truly helped me. People just letting us know how they feel about the different programs. And then from more and more people showing up to use the programs as well.
Oh, go ahead, Chai.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, part of what we're doing also that's kind of happening at the same time that we're helping people and we're doing these programs is that we're also building trust. You know, we're building trust between the people in the community that needs the help. We're building trust with the organizations. And then we're stepping in and bridging that gap between the two. You know, I tell my son all the time that, you know, it matters how you go out into the world. It really matters. People are watching you all the time. Rather or not, you know that they're watching. They're watching you sometimes to figure out a better way to do what they're already doing. They're watching you to figure out, you know, how do I make a decision that I'm kind of on the fence for? They're watching you to figure out, you know, how do you treat people? And so when we're standing in these gaps and connecting the two, we're building a lot of trust, and we're working with, you know, other organizations, and they're able to build improved relationships and interactions with the communities that they serve. And that's so huge, because again, that goes back to creating hope and changing perspectives. And when people have hope, they stop living in a mindset of lack, and they stop surviving just the day, and they are able to then start creating and then start dreaming. But you gotta repair and build those relationships. And the only authentic way to do that, Ezra, is by building that trust. You know, so often people assume that you have that trust because they're in a certain position. Well, that's not the case. And for a lot of people in, you know, our community, it is people in those positions that have done some wrong there. And so those are the stories that get passed back. And those are the stories that create fear, that create hesitation, that stops you from wanting to, you know, use a medication the way it's supposed to be used, or get creates fear around you going in to get checkups, because you were told when you go in, they cut into your cancer and it spreads everywhere. There's all of these old wives' tales. Well, when you gain the trust of people and you allow yourself to be vulnerable with them, learn with them, develop and grow with them, it kind of levels the playing field. And you're kind of both in the same place, starting from that point and growing forward as you go. And that's really a beautiful thing, because it sends the message of we're in this together. So if something happens from this point forward, we're both going to be surprised. But guess what? I am going to step in, and I want to be a part of the accountability for fixing or adjusting or bringing a solution to a situation that is unwanted that might take place.
We've got a couple of minutes left, and I don't want to give short shrift to some events that are coming up. One of them very soon, the August Ball, is coming up on Saturday, August 5th. And you've also got a back to school project that you're working on at Hope Restores, and later in the year, Halloween fundraiser. So let's hit the high points on some of these things that are coming up. First of all, in celebration of Emancipation Day, August 1st, 1887, the August Ball is coming up, and Hope Restores is involved in that, along with Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge, the Enduring Families Project, Black Student Leaders, so tell me about the August Ball.
Yeah, so we're so excited. So the August Ball is going to be performed by the members on the Juneteenth Court. It is a rite to passage, a coming of age, if you would say, historical event that had stopped. What was it? 1928 was the last one. And so we had gotten with Denise from Enduring Families, and we were talking about it, and Shamaya and I said, it would be so great if we brought that back. And so now this is the second August Ball event. It's going to be a great time. It'll be at UWL. Tickets are on sale right now. It'll be at the Bluffside Ballroom, and you can purchase the tickets on our website, on Black's website, and it'll be a black tie event, so it will be formal. There will be food and dancing, and to see our youth, they have been working very hard to put together a very special presentation for everyone. So definitely come out. It's going to be really beautiful.
What about this Maya, you were talking earlier about before we started our conversation on the air about this back to school event that you work on with Black student leaders. Tell me about the back to school event that you, what are you trying to provide for the kids?
We have done, this is going to be our third year doing the back to school event. It is a event that is put on by teens for teens, and we mix the middle schoolers in there as well. This event allows teenagers to come and help themselves, meaning that if their parents are at work or their parents have an addiction or their parents are dealing with mental health or their parents are just not willing or able to, they can come to Hope Restores and they're able to get some school clothes so they can feel good on their first day of school. Some of the things that the Black student leaders were hearing from students are things like, hey, I'm not going to school the first day of school. My parents don't get paid until later on, but I got nothing to wear. I'm not going. Or students just being like, man, I don't have anything to wear to school. I don't even want to be there, you know? And so, I mean, we've all been there in life. We know the first day of school is really important. We know having something nice on, it pumps you up, makes you feel good. And so that's when the Black student leaders came up with the idea of doing a back to school event that's put on for teenagers by teenagers. And so that we don't have all the rules of needing a parent there, the kids can sign up. Then Hope Restores steps in and we take kids to the stores and we take them shopping with their gift cards. Cause you know, what's a gift card if you can't get to the store? And so that's how we step in and we help with some of the fundraising. So a way that people can help is that stopping by and dropping off gift cards, deciding if you want to adopt a teenager, with purchasing some gift cards for them, wanting to transport kids and be a part of that as well. We're going to have a few fundraisers this year that people can stop by and purchase food so the money can go towards the back to school event. Just getting involved in any way possible. It is really important for our students to feel good their first day of school. And we just, we like supporting the students and we just can use some extra help with donations and volunteers for this event. And so the event is going to be on Thursday, August 30th is the date. But from now on till then, you guys can drop off gift cards and donations for the back to school event. There's flyers online and information on our Facebook page and Black Student Leaders Facebook page as well.
And so speaking of that, if somebody is hearing part of our conversation today and is not capable of remembering all the details, where can they find more information about Hope Restores?
We have a website. It is www.hoperestoreswi.org. You guys can visit us on Facebook. We're on Instagram. Same thing of Black Student Leaders. They are on Facebook and Instagram as well. Sign up for our newsletter on our website. We have an awesome weekly newsletter that comes out with tons of information.
A lot of information in the newsletter, including you were getting passionate about some of these affirmative thoughts that people have to have about themselves. You include one of those in your newsletter every week, don't you, Maya?
Yes, I believe in affirmations are so important. So if you're not doing your daily affirmations, get on there. Self-love is really important. Speak positive things over yourself. When you feel good about yourself, you're more likely to get out here and help others. So check out our weekly affirmations.
All right. Shai Jackson and Maya Curtis have been with us today. They are the co-founders and executive directors of Hope Restores. Maya, thanks a lot for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I totally enjoyed it. You guys come join us. Community starts when we start working together.
There we go. Shai Jackson, welcome back to Newsmakers, and thank you for being here.
I appreciate it, Ezra. Thank you so much. And thank you guys for listening.
Absolutely. Our show is Newsmakers. My producer is Kate Spranger, and I thank her very much. If you'd like to hear part of our conversation again that you might have missed, you can find this and our whole archives on the website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. Join us again next week for Newsmakers here on Wisconsin Public Radio.